today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Wednesday, June 29th, 2022. My name is Rachel Thorson Mithelman, and I am your reader today. We'll look at the front page first, and the headline is Councilman Nelson Shadows City Staff. Getting aboard a garbage truck is part of elected officials' learning. This is by Kelly Bloomquist. In the past few months, City Councilman Cameron Nelson has hitched a ride around Fort Dodge in an ambulance, a police car, a fire truck, and even on a city garbage truck. It's all for learning purposes, as Nelson, who represents Ward 2, wants to understand the inner workings of city departments and their employees. Since being sworn into office in January, Nelson has shadowed the Fort Dodge Fire Department and its paramedics, the Fort Dodge Police Department, Nuisance and Inspections Departments, and Public Works Department. When I decided to visit different departments within the city, it was to get more information on both sides that would better help me represent the residents of my ward, said Nelson. I started getting calls very early on from citizens who had concerns and needed help with different areas regarding city government. I realized that it was hard to answer some of these questions without gaining firsthand knowledge of them and knowing more about what they were talking about. Nelson also wanted to meet with city staff so that he understood the different departments and how they functioned. It would be hard for me to make a well-informed decision on a budget item or whether a certain department needed something to help with day-to-day tasks if I hadn't been right there with them as they experienced some of these issues and constraints, said Nelson. Nelson and fellow councilman Quenel McCaleb both received orientation processes when they were newly sworn in January, and soon after began the budget planning process. Nelson said after city budgets wrapped up, he began to use his day off from his full-time position at Shimcat Motor Company to spend the day learning within various city departments. The process has really been eye-opening and extremely informative, said Nelson. It has made me realize even more than I already did how much there is entailed in city government. I feel like with each one of these that I am doing, I am getting better and better suited to represent the citizens of Fort Dodge. I also have realized how amazing our public workers are. There have been things I have learned at each department that I hope to use in the future to help with everything they need to provide their vital services to the city. Nelson rode with Fort Dodge Police Captain Donald McLaren for 10 hours earlier this spring to experience what a shift is like for local law enforcement. It's nice to know that the council is wanting to understand my job and our job as Fort Dodge police officers, said McLaren. I think it speaks volumes that they want to know, and that translates to them wanting to make Fort Dodge a great place to work. Shadowing one specific department, the Nuisance and Inspections Department, was especially educational for Nelson given the number of calls that he receives from constituents. This was a very eye-opening experience for me that included many surprises, he said. I take a lot of calls from constituents on nuisance complaints, and this was a great day to learn what can be done to help those citizens out with their concerns. It was also great to see how the inspections department handles some of the situations they are put into daily. Nelson plans to continue shadowing city employees and departments throughout the coming year, including riding with the snowplow drivers in the winter season, as he believes it continues to provide him with perspective and education, as well as being able to better care for his Ward 2 constituents. I would encourage every citizen to learn more about the different departments and inner workings of our city, said Nelson. I know all of the departments are more than happy to spend time sharing what they do with the citizens of Fort Dodge. I have learned so much, and I would be more than happy to share my experiences with others. The more people know, the better the city is as a whole. I encourage residents to get a hold of me with any questions or concerns, or with ideas of things I could be doing to make our community better. And this story is accompanied by a photograph of Nelson in a garbage truck watching as Jay Ort, who is a maintenance 2 worker, as he adjusts the screen that shows him the bin during Nelson's time learning about the Public Works Department. And below the fold on the front page is the continuation of a series that has been in the Messenger this spring about high school graduates. And this one, the series is called Taking Center Stage With, and this today it is Taking Center Stage with Gracie Harvey. Harvey enjoys learning while being involved. And this is by Dana Becker. Gracie Harvey has become the person she is today thanks to her experiences in a number of activities at St. Edmund Catholic Schools. Harvey, a Gale senior, has been involved in everything from show choir, speech and drama, to basketball and softball. I think it is very important to be as involved as you can, Harvey said. You gain different skills in each activity you are involved in. What I have learned in the choir room is much different than what I have learned on the basketball court, but they are both equally important. The more you are involved in, the more memories you gain. One of those special memories happened this year. My favorite memory is qualifying for show choir finals at the Emmitsburg competition, Harvey said. This was the first time St. Edmund has qualified in quite some time. Along with her role in show choir, speech, and drama, Harvey was also involved in the musical, St. Edmund Honor Society, and student body. She ran cross-country and track around competing on the basketball court and softball diamond. I hope to be remembered as someone who always tried their best, Harvey said, and got outside of their comfort zone. For one of her influences, Harvey credits choir teacher Ben Wegner. I really look up to him, she said. He makes the music department such a fun and inviting space. He makes sure that everyone has an opportunity to feel successful. Harvey plans on attending the University of Iowa Honors Program and majoring in journalism and mass communication. Turning to page 2, the article is titled Pain, Grief, and Hope. Friendship Haven Remembers Pandemic. This is by Bill Shea. There was a time when masks were worn only at Halloween, and pandemic was a word someone could use to score some serious points at Scrabble. Then came March 2020, and masks became a part of daily attire, and pandemic was instantly added to everyone's vocabulary as COVID-19 swept through the country. What followed was 2 years of pain, grief, and stress. But those 2 years also brought resiliency, hope, and in many cases a greater connection between people despite lockdowns and social distancing. The anguish was remembered and the new hope was celebrated Tuesday at Friendship Haven during a service called A Night of Transition and Blessing. About 40 people attended the service. The Reverend Jennifer Owen, chaplain of Friendship Haven, said the pandemic was traumatic for some, painful for many, and stressful for all. Many of us feel physically and emotionally worn down, she said. The pandemic has impacted us more deeply than we are aware. But the pandemic also brought out some of the best elements of human nature. We have found resilience and grace over and over and over, Owen said. We continue to find a way forward. Julie Thorson, the chief executive officer of Friendship Haven, described the 27 months of the pandemic as the, quote, season of invisible scars, end quote. Tonight is certainly a great tool to help us all heal, she said. According to Thorson, in 2020, 11 residents of Friendship Haven died of COVID-related illnesses. None of the retirement community's residents died of COVID last year, but so far in 2022, three have died. You bet that it left a scar, Thorson said. Deb Johnson of Fort Dodge, who attends church at Friendship Haven, reflected on how grateful she was that no one in her family contracted COVID. She also talked about how the pandemic brought people together. In her case, an old friendship was rekindled. Johnson said the pandemic resulted in an insane amount of camaraderie. The Reverend Austin Hill, pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Fort Dodge, talked about his own experience getting sick with COVID. Being unable to taste ice cream was his first clue that something was wrong. He grieved the loss of a member of the church's board of elders who died of COVID and has seen longtime congregation members drift away. But Hill said he has witnessed some positive things. I have seen people step up in new and unprecedented ways, he said. Friendship Haven residents Don Seltz and Linda Opheim also spoke, and Vara Groot played the piano. The article is accompanied by two photographs, one of Pastor Austin Hill sharing at this service, and the other of an altar, and in front of it is a lilac sapling. It will be planted on the grounds of Friendship Haven to serve as a reminder of the sorrow, pain, and renewed hope caused by the COVID pandemic. We'll take a little break from the everyday news to look at the This Date in History column. This comes from the Associated Press. Today is Wednesday, June 29th. It's the 180th day of 2022. There are 185 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on June 29th, 1613, London's original Globe Theatre, where many of Shakespeare's plays were performed, was destroyed by a fire sparked by a cannon shot during a performance of Henry VIII. Also on this date, in 1520, Montezuma II, the ninth and the last emperor of the Aztecs, died in Tenochtitlan under unclear circumstances. Some say he was killed by his own subjects, others say by the Spanish. On this date in 1972, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a trio of death sentences, saying the way they had been imposed constituted cruel and unusual punishment. The ruling prompted states to effectively impose a moratorium on executions until their capital punishment laws could be revised. And in 2009, on this date, disgraced financier Bernard Madoff received a 150-year sentence for his multi-billion-dollar fraud. Madoff died in prison in April of 2021. So that was this date in history. Turning to another local story, this by Bill Shea, arson blaze destroys garage. A blaze that has been ruled an arson destroyed a garage and damaged a house and pickup truck early Monday morning. It's an intentionally set fire, Fire Department Captain Steve Teske said. No one was injured in the fire at 112 11th Street Northwest that was reported at 12:35 a.m. on Monday. Teske said two neighbors who were outside spotted a huge orange glow where there had been no sign of a fire just minutes earlier. He said those neighbors helped two elderly residents get out of the house before firefighters arrived. When firefighters arrived, they found a detached two-car garage fully engulfed in flames. The roof had already collapsed, Teske said. He said there was also fire on the back side. He said there was also fire on the back side of the house where the electrical service line was attached. Additionally, power lines had burned through and fallen to the ground. There were no vehicles in the garage. The pickup truck that was damaged was parked next to the garage. Teske said Mid-American Energy crews were able to quickly connect a new electrical service line to the house, and the residents were able to stay there after firefighters used a thermal imaging camera to check it for any signs of a smoldering fire. Firefighters also cleared smoke from the house. Fort Dodge firefighters and police were on scene until 2:44 a.m. The property is owned by Jack Bailey, according to online records of the Webster County Assessor's Office. The site of Monday's fire is about 75 yards from a vacant house at 1025 First Avenue Northwest that caught fire on June 15th. The house was boarded up and had no electrical service. The cause of that fire remains under investigation. Monday's fire was the third one in Fort Dodge that was declared to be intentionally set in recent months. The other fires were at 549 3rd Avenue North on April 8th and 312 South 16th Street on June 5th. A woman was arrested on a charge of second-degree arson in connection with the 3rd Avenue North fire. Turning to some national and international news from the USA Network, NOAM taps impeachment prosecutor to replace former attorney general. This from the Associated Press from Pierre, South Dakota. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has appointed the lead prosecutor in the Senate impeachment trial of former Attorney General Jason Ravensburg to fill the remainder of Ravensburg's term. Noem's interim appointment of Pennington County State's Attorney Mark Vargo was effective Tuesday. She pushed for Ravensburg, a first-term fellow Republican, to step down days after he struck and killed a pedestrian with his car in 2020, and later pushed for his impeachment. Ravensburg was ultimately convicted last week of two impeachment counts and was removed from office. Mark Vargo returns integrity, experience, and stability to the Attorney General's office, Noem said in a statement. Vargo will serve until January when the winner of the November election is sworn in. Marty Jackley, the Republican nominee and Ravensburg's predecessor, has Noem's endorsement. Jackley served as the state's attorney general for about a decade and the state's U.S. attorney for 3 years. Ravensburg was removed from office last week after the Senate heard testimony about his conduct in the September 2020 crash that killed Joseph Bover, who was struck as he walked along a highway. Ravensburg had announced shortly before his impeachment trial that he would not seek a second term. The Senate also voted to prohibit him from holding public office again. Ravensburg appeared before a state ethics board Monday to press for an investigation of Noem, the person he blames for his impeachment. As Attorney General, Ravensburg last year filed a pair of complaints against Noem to the state's Government Accountability Board, alleging she abused the powers of her office by interfering in a state agency as it evaluated her daughter's application for a real estate appraiser license and by misusing state airplanes. The board, which is comprised of retired judges, has not decided whether to investigate Noam, who is running for re-election after a first term in which she has gained national prominence in her party and is widely considered to be a White House aspirant in 2024. Also from USA Today, Ghislaine Maxwell sentenced to 20 years for helping Epstein. This from the Associated Press in New York. Ghislaine Maxwell, the jet-setting socialite who once consorted with royals, presidents, and billionaires, was sentenced Tuesday to 20 years in prison for helping the financier Jeffrey Epstein sexually abuse underage girls. The stiff sentence was a victory for a group of women who spent years fighting for justice after an earlier generation of prosecutors failed to pursue the predatory power couple. Epstein, who killed himself in 2019 while awaiting trial, sexually abused children hundreds of times over more than a decade, exploiting vulnerable girls as young as 14. Prosecutors said he couldn't have done so without the help of Maxwell, his longtime companion. Maxwell, wearing a blue prison uniform and a white mask to conform with coronavirus rules, looked to one side as the sentence was announced, but otherwise did not react. She wore leg shackles that could be heard rattling when she walked into the courtroom. The sentence was shorter than the term sought by prosecutors, but Epstein's accusers still expressed relief. "It's been an incredibly long road to justice for myself and for many other survivors," said Sarah Ransom, one of Epstein's accusers. "This is for the girls that didn't have their say, the ones that weren't here." A jury in December convicted Maxwell, age 60, of sex trafficking, transporting a minor to participate in illegal sex acts, and two conspiracy charges. Judge Allison J. Nathan noted, as she imposed the prison term and a $750,000 fine, that Maxwell never expressed remorse for her crimes. The judge said she wanted the sentence to send an unmistakable message that nobody was above the law. Addressing the court earlier, Maxwell stood at a lectern and said she empathized with the survivors and hoped her punishment would bring them peace. But she did not admit culpability and laid blame for the abuse on Epstein, saying meeting him was the greatest regret of my life. She called him a manipulative, cunning, and controlling man who lived a profoundly compartmentalized life. The judge said Maxwell was being punished for her heinous and predatory crimes, not Epstein's. She criticized Maxwell's pattern of deflection and blame. Four survivors at the sentencing described their sexual abuse, including Annie Farmer, who was briefly overcome with emotion as she addressed the judge. She said she and her sister tried to go public with their stories about being abused by Epstein and Maxwell 2 decades ago, only to be shut down by the powerful couple through threats and influence with authorities. "We will continue to live with the harm she caused us," Farmer said. Inside a courtroom crowded with reporters, three of Maxwell's siblings sat in a row behind her. Outside the courthouse, Kevin Maxwell said that his sister won't give up on her legal battle. Defense attorney Bobby Sternheim promised to appeal. She said Epstein left Maxwell holding the whole bag. "We all know that the person who should have been sentenced today escaped accountability, avoided his victims, avoided absorbing their pain, and receiving the punishment he truly deserved," she said. Epstein and Maxwell's associations with some of the world's most famous people were not a prominent part of her trial, but mentions of friends such as Bill Clinton and Donald Trump showed how the pair exploited their connections to impress their prey. The trial revolved around allegations from only a handful of Epstein's accusers. And a COVID update story from the Associated Press. Panel pushes new COVID booster for fall. Some U.S. adults are a step closer to getting updated COVID-19 boosters this fall, as government advisors voted Tuesday that it's time to tweak shots to better match the most recent virus variants. The Food and Drug Administration will have to decide the exact recipe, but expect a combination shot that adds protection against a version of the super contagious Omicron variant to the original vaccine. Advisors to the FDA voted 19-2 that some version of Omicron should be part of a fall booster campaign, an effort to blunt an expected COVID-19 surge. "We are going to be behind the eight ball if we wait longer," agreed Dr. Mark Sawyer of the University of California, San Diego. But panelists cautioned that the recommendation doesn't necessarily mean everyone would get a tweaked booster. They might be urged only for older adults or those at high risk from the virus. Current COVID-19 vaccines have saved millions of lives globally, and those used in the U.S. still offer strong protection against hospitalization and death, especially after a booster dose. But their ability to block infection dropped markedly when the supercontagious Omicron mutant emerged. Pfizer and Moderna tested shots updated to better match the Omicron that surged over the winter, but that first mutant has disappeared, replaced by its genetically distinct relatives. The two newest Omicron cousins, called BA4 and BA5, together now make up half of U.S. cases, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Only about half of vaccinated Americans have gotten a single booster. And while a second booster that's recommended for people 50 and older again restores protection, only a quarter of those eligible have gotten one. Authorities hope an updated booster for fall might entice more interest. So what's the evidence for a recipe change? Among the evidence Tuesday, one, both Moderna and Pfizer found what scientists called bivalent shots, a combination of the original vaccine plus Omicron protection, substantially boosted levels of antibodies capable of fighting that variant, more than simply giving another regular dose. Two, Pfizer and its partner BioNTech also are offering up an Omicron-only shot. Also in animal testing is vaccine further tweaked to match BA4 and BA5. And thirdly, a third company, Novavax, is awaiting FDA authorization of a more traditional kind of COVID-19 vaccine, protein-based shots. It argued that a booster of its regular vaccine promises a good immune response against the new Omicron mutants. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We will next turn to the opinion and section, and then the obituaries. On the opinion page, the Messenger editorial is titled, "CJ BioAmerica is valued member of the local community. Company's positive impact extends beyond economics." A unique international business has been flourishing in Webster County since 2013. CJ BioAmerica has a major facility west of Fort Dodge in the Ag Industrial Park called Iowa's Crossroads of Global Innovation, and it is growing. A $20 million expansion was formally launched last week with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. It is the second expansion of the plant, which started production in November of 2013. CJ BioAmerica receives fermented dextrose from the Cargill plant next door and uses it to make amino acids that are added to livestock feed. It also makes a liquid soil amendment. The new expansion will enable it to make more of an amino acid called granular threonine. Before the just-completed expansion, the company was making 150,000 metric tons a year of amino acids. That figure will only grow. The company employs about 220 people. But the impact of CJ BioAmerica is much greater than that which can be measured in various economic metrics. The company and its employees quickly immersed themselves in the work of supporting the Fort Dodge and Webster County community that welcomed them just about a decade ago. The company is part of a much larger business called CJ Cheiljedang, based in Seoul, South Korea. The people of South Korea are eternally grateful to the American veterans who fought in the 1950 to 1953 Korean War and saved their country from being conquered by communist North Korea. That shows in some of the things CJ BioAmerica has done. The company has paid to send Korean War veterans on the Brushy Creek Area Honor Flight trips to Washington, D.C. It has donated a Korean War memorial that was placed in the Terry Monkey Veterans Memorial Park. The company paid to update the 1960s vintage kitchen in the Fort Dodge Firehouse. CJ BioAmerica is truly a good corporate citizen. It produces quality products that have a beneficial impact on the nation's food supply. It employs local people and does business with local companies. And if that isn't enough, it pitches in various ways to make the community a better place to live. Thank you, CJ BioAmerica. We hope you are part of our community for decades to come. The editorial cartoon is clever today. A traveler is having his luggage tagged, while the person at the desk at the airport says, "Your plane is delayed. Care to visit our flight school while you wait?" And another editorial on the opinion page is from syndicated columnist Frama Harrop. "St. Teresa has some bad news for Republicans. There are more tears shed over answered prayers than unanswered prayers," St. Teresa of Avila said. "Republicans may soon learn just how that works." It used to be that Republican politicians with no fixed views on abortion would pray loudly for an end to Roe v. Wade. They knew that their stances would please abortion foes while not alarming the pro-choice majority. As long as Roe remained a law protecting the right to end a pregnancy, pro-choice voters open to other aspects of the Republican platform could shrug at such candidates. "Abortion goes back to the people," says a Wall Street Journal editorial as it puts on a brave face in the wake of the Supreme Court's striking down of a popular right. They've got that right. And President Joe Biden concurs. "Roe is on the ballot," he announced right after the ruling. And Democrats who've been engaging in anticipatory grief over expected losses in the midterms have new hope for holding on to their legislative majorities. The GOP ought not take solace from a poll taken right after the ruling in which 78% of Republicans said they favored the decision. It really should worry about that 22% that, despite all, still identify as Republicans but want a constitutional right to an abortion. For not only has this ruling rattled the all-important suburban swing vote, but it has also unleashed right-wing radicals who are already launching threats at women who go to states where abortion remains legal. The nastiness is just beginning. No lesser an authority on curtailing of rights than Justice Clarence Thomas has come right out and said that the Roe ruling puts same-sex marriage and even contraception back in play. It helps not that his wife is a prominent insurrectionist who has made common cause with the savages who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Chief Justice John Roberts has clearly lost control. The outcome of overturning Roe is not a simple matter of sending the issue back to the individual states. The civic culture is already dealing with the Texas law that waves bags of money at creeps willing to hound women they suspect of having abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. A 6-week limit is a virtual ban. Many, if not most women, don't know they are pregnant that early on. Interestingly, the Mississippi law that the Supreme Court upheld in the Roe case, a 15-week limit on abortion, would not have outlawed the procedure. The vast majority of abortions are done within 15 weeks. Mississippi, however, is one of many states that has passed another law triggering a real ban should Roe be thrown out. Nowadays, 54% of abortions are pill-based procedures. States that are prohibiting abortion, Louisiana, for example, are trying to outlaw the mailing of abortion medications from elsewhere. Good luck with that. And are they going to stop cars at the state line to inspect handbags? Some abortion foes want women ending their pregnancies charged with a capital crime, like murder. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson says he's into that. The willingness to trample on Americans' privacy has developers of apps that track menstrual cycles concerned that their users might get hacked and harassed over whether they give birth. These services, such as Apple Health, Flow and Clue, are used both by women who want to get pregnant and those who don't. Some pro-life activists want Congress to ban abortion nationwide. That, the Wall Street Journal opines, will strike many Americans as hypocritical after decades of Republican claims that repealing Roe would return the issue to the states. But that is something they will undoubtedly try. Answered prayers have their consequences. Again, that's from syndicated columnist Froma Harrop. Turning to today's obituaries, the first is for Laura Nell Hendrickson. Laura Nell Hendrickson, age 90, of Fort Dodge, died Friday, June 24, 2022, at Fort Dodge Health and Rehab. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, July 2, 2022, at the historic Bruce Funeral Home, with Pastor Jenna Finch Manchester of Trinity United Methodist Church officiating. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, July 1, 2022, at the funeral home, and continue 1 hour prior to the service. Interment will take place at Memorial Park Cemetery. Services will be live-streamed via the Historic Bruce Funeral Home Facebook page. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left for the family at the funeral home website, brucesfuneralhome.com. Laura was born April 13, 1932, in Lorville, Iowa, the daughter of Ellis and Sarah Boyd. She graduated from Rockwell City High School in 1951. On June 14, 1958, Laura was united in marriage to Lauren E. Hendrickson at the First United Methodist Church in Fort Dodge. Laura was a homemaker who worked at Friendship Haven for a few years. She enjoyed playing the organ at home, playing dominoes, bird watching, and squirrels. She was a member of the First United Methodist Church in Fort Dodge, where she belonged to the United Methodist Women's Group. She was also a member of Plane Crazies, and EAA. Laura is survived by three children. Terry Hendrickson of Hemet, California, Lori Schwering and husband Ron of Largo, Florida, and Troy Hendrickson and wife Stacy of Fort Dodge. She's also survived by three grandchildren, John Ballmer Jr., Nicole Ballmer, and James Short, and seven great-grandchildren. She is also survived by many nieces and nephews, including her beloved niece, Chris Olson. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Lauren E. Hendrickson in 1998, and five siblings, Gaylord Boyd, Byron Boyd, Edwin Boyd, Rose Nelson, and Doris Boyd. The next obituary is for Patricia L. Bangert. Patricia Lou Bangert, age 87, of Blue Eye, Missouri, died February 16th, 2022, at Cox Medical Center in Branson, Missouri. Celebration of life is 11 a.m. Saturday, July 2nd, 2022, at St. John Lutheran Church in Pomeroy, with a luncheon to follow. Patricia was born in Omaha, Nebraska, on October 2nd, 1934, to Ben J. and Vernita North. Patricia married Philip T. Bangert on February 11th, 1951, at Grace Methodist Church in Manson, Iowa. Patricia was preceded in death by her parents, husband Philip, sisters Nancy Clark and Donna Hunter, brother Glenn North, sons Bruce Bangert and Brian Bangert, grandson Benjamin, great-granddaughters Allison and Emily, and son-in-law John Menke. She is survived by her son Michael, wife Julie, daughter Phyllis Menke, daughter-in-law Mona, and 11 beloved grandchildren, 21 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. Sisters Mary Condon, Sharon North, and many loved nieces and nephews. Next, Letha Smith. Letha Mae Smith, age 87, of Dakota City, Iowa, passed away Saturday, June 25th, 2022, at her home, surrounded by family. A Celebration of Life memorial and reception will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, July 1st, at River Valley Orchards and Winery, which is found at 1645 220th Street in Humboldt. Memorials may be directed to the family. Arrangements are with Historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. To view the complete obituary and leave online condolences for the family, please visit the funeral home website, which is brucesfuneralhome.com. Next, Ronald Warren. This is from Humboldt. Funeral services for Ronald Warren are 11 a.m. Friday, July 1st, 2022, at Faith United Methodist Church in Gilmore City. Visitation is 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at Lent's Funeral Home in Gilmore City. Next, Carol Flatabow. This from Eagle Grove. Funeral service for Carol Flatabow is 11 a.m. Thursday at Faust Funeral Home. Visitation is 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. And lastly, Daryl Albrecht. Daryl Albrecht, age 75, of Clare, passed away Tuesday, June 28, 2022, at the VA Medical Center in Des Moines. Services are pending with Loffersweiler Funeral Home. That completes today's obituaries. And we'll turn to the sports section. The first headline is Giving Back. This comes from the St. Edmund Youth Wrestling Clinic. Teske brings national champion and close friend Bravo Young to Fort Dodge for camp. this by Eric Pratt. Nothing gets Brody Teske's competitive juices flowing like being on a wrestling mat. Not just as an athlete, though. The four-time Fort Dodge state champion loves the sport and wants to see it grow in ways that extend far beyond individual achievement. Teske recruited a longtime friend, two-time Penn State national champion Roman Bravo Young, to accompany him to his old stomping grounds for a youth camp at St. Edmund High School on Tuesday. Over 80 kids signed up for the two sessions, which offered students in grades 1 through 12 an opportunity to learn about style, technique, and demeanor from two of the very best. "I thought it was a great day," said Teske, a two-time NCAA qualifier for the University of Northern Iowa. "We were really pleased with the turnout and the enthusiasm from the kids. That's what it's all about, investing in the Fort Dodge area and the sport. Given it was kind of short notice, we appreciated the support from the wrestlers, their families, and the St. Edmund administration, from Activities Director David Flattery on down. I know there tends to be a stigma here about Dodgers versus Gales and all that, but it didn't matter to me or any of my friends in high school, and it still doesn't. We had kids from both schools here on Tuesday, and I couldn't be happier about it. The more, the better. Same goes for the whole region, really. My passion is spreading my love for wrestling and getting future generations to buy in." Flattery called it an unbelievable day. "It was great, having two of the top wrestlers in the country here to put on a clinic for area kids was outstanding," Flattery said. "The kids gained a ton of knowledge and will have a memory and experience that will last a lifetime. We also got to showcase our school and our facilities. A huge thank you to Brody and Roman for making this camp work." Roman Bravo Young, who was Teske's roommate at Penn State before the former Dodger transferred to UNI, called it a solid camp. We had a good turnout for it being kind of last minute," Bravo Young said. "I was in the area conducting a clinic in Iowa City and always want to give back with a longtime friend. I know Brody is the man in Fort Dodge." Teske added that the local camp idea originated 2 years ago when he was in Iowa City for the Iowa-Penn State duel. "I was in the process of transferring at the time, but I was there to support my roommate," Teske said. "My dad, Dan, and I went out to eat with Leo Stuckey, who mentioned popping over to Dodge if we were ever in the area. So when that opportunity came up, even though it was short notice, we made the call, and St. Edmund got it done." Teske was recently in Arizona, working the youth circuit with Bravo Young, and the Nittany Lions star was more than willing to return the favor. Arizona is his territory. Bravo Young was a four-time state champion in high school, so he was ready to help me and mine, Teske said. "He's a great friend, a true friend. He's been by my side through the highs and lows. It's been great to see him blow up on the national scene. I'm so happy for him. I'm really thankful for our friendship and that he was willing to do this with me." The story is accompanied by a photograph of these two young men, Brody Teske and Roman Bravo Young, and also a photograph of Teske instructing some very young wrestlers. Another story on the front of the sports section: Rough Ridge ready to elevate hoop dreamers. Ex-Pocahontas area star, new Spirit Lake coach offering video instruction. This by Chris Johnson. Ella Ruffridge learned to play basketball at a very young age, and the love of the game stuck with her all the way through college graduation. Once a student learning and trying to get better, the 2017 Pocahontas area graduate is now the teacher. During a private basketball lesson last Thanksgiving break, Ruffridge was asked by a parent what her future plans were beyond coaching and teaching. The discussion helped launch Elevate in Ruffridge's mind. I was giving a private lesson, and Holly Mefford, who is now a business partner, the mom of one of the girls I was training, asked me about my future plans, Ruffridge said. She then encouraged me to highly consider making videos of all of the basketball drills I did growing up, all of the drills that helped me become a better player, helped me set so many records in the state of Iowa, and helped to lead our team to state championships and allowed me to play Division I basketball. I never envisioned making videos, let alone launching a website, but I knew I had the capability to help a lot of kids with these videos, and I loved the idea of continuing my journey with basketball. Ruffridge's determined work on the court began as a youngster, blossoming into a two-time state championship career with Pocahontas area. She finished as Iowa's all-time leading five-on-five scorer and was a key component during Missouri State's two trips to the Sweet 16. After graduation, Ruffridge served as an assistant coach at Johnston during the Dragons Class 5A state championship campaign last winter. Now, players of all ages will have a chance to learn the drills and techniques that helped Ruffridge become the player she is now. Doing all of this is just another way to give back to the game that means so much to me. I love nothing more than being a role model and helping kids in any way that I can, Ruffridge said. By putting out these videos, it allows me to help an even wider audience. Elevate is for all ages, players just starting out to players getting ready to take their game to the college level. The thing I love is when you purchase this course, the players have access to use it wherever and whenever. They can use it at home, on the driveway, in the garage, in the gym, wherever they have space to dribble. Ruffridge's video course is packed with basketball knowledge to help players develop their skills. The course is jam-packed with a variety of dribbling workouts, along with many of my shooting workouts, Ruffridge said. I walk them through each drill, demonstrating the moves, and then I also include a workout where they can follow along with me. In all, there are over 70 of my favorite drills in the series. These are drills I did over and over every day to help with hand-eye coordination, speed, and becoming the best dribbler and shooter that I possibly could. Ruffridge, who is entering her first year at Spirit Lake, will be a sixth grade social studies teacher and assistant girls basketball coach. While teaching, she hopes to grow Elevate on her website. I can't wait to keep growing and expanding the website. There are so many different workouts I want to add, and have each one build on the last to really help players improve, Ruffridge said. The first course is the basis for everything that is coming next. Every day that I'm in the gym, I'm still working at increasing my knowledge toward the game and how to help athletes get better, now from a coaching perspective. The game of basketball will always be in Ruffridge's blood. She also shares her passion through personal lessons and speaking engagements. Another exciting thing that came about out of all of this is the opportunity to run camps and do speaking engagements, Ruffridge said. It's been so fun for me to come back to Iowa where it started and really feel the warm welcome home from everyone. I've gotten so much great feedback from the course, as well as people contacting me for one-on-one coaching and camps. Ruffridge has been learning the business side of the sport. I just really feel incredibly blessed to keep going on this journey that has given me so much in life. For more information about the Elevate course, or if a coach is interested in having Ruffridge help with a camp, visit the website ellaruffridge.com. Interested participants are able to use coupon code MESSENGER for 50% off Ruffridge's signature course, for a limited time. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger on Wednesday, June 29th, 2022. My name is Rachel Thorson Mithelman, and I've been your reader today. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.